When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
This is Jim Semivan, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Yeah. Imagine Steve said, can Jeremy speak to the donor alignment of people like Nancy Mace who are attempting to steal disclosure? Is it related to figures like Peter Thiel? Can he speak to any figures or groups who the UFO topic following public should be skeptical about related to this?
I think we should be highly aware that they said in Congress that certain questions were not to be asked. I think we should be highly aware of when Representative Burchett referenced financial interest in Congress. And I think we should be highly aware of the financial influences that are now tied to the UFO, UAP disclosure movement. I won't sit here and say that I fully understand it or that I have conclusions yet, but I am tracking it. And I think the question from your audience member is a very valuable question. And the reason I think it is because if you look at what the motivation would be financially tied to the UFO phenomenon, you can just look back in history and you can see that certain craft and materials have been allocated to certain defense contractors, and those materials have been exploited for derivative technologies. And one that is very popularly known is Lockheed Martin. And we know that because the head of the DIA UFO program, Dr. James Lukacsky, talked about a transfer from the vice president of Lockheed Martin that was supposed to go to OSAP, a DIA program, and it was shut down by the head of the CIA, two people within the CIA. So you have to wonder, what is the financial advantage to being able to obtain and hold and exploit these technologies? And there's huge financial advantage. So I think we should be very aware. Now, not that it's wholly bad. I mean, if we didn't make a lot of progress on these machines and this technology, we definitely should pull them out of places and get them better looked at. But you got to have motivation to want to position yourself for that, for material transfers of these technologies. And look, you know, things are financially motivated, you know, they are. So it's not wholly bad, but we should track it because I believe that's where we're going to learn a lot if we understand who's trying to pull the puppet strings on who gets these craft.
Yeah, I think George said as much again in the latest Weaponized about, you know, it's billions and billions of dollars of taxpayers' money is going to these things. And actually, I was just speaking today to John Blitch, and I don't know which order the interviews are going to go out. And he talked about he's got a book that's going to come out, and he's trying to put forward the case that there has to be elements of forgiveness to people in the government, people outside the government, potentially some of the NHI themselves. It goes into abductions. And he talks about even the idea that perhaps there's a case, I hope I get this right, that, you know, when you hear about the military charges $3,000 for a toilet seat on board a certain aircraft, which is ridiculous, but they've potentially come out one day and say, for the good of the nation, to try and build up defences against certain aspects of what this may be or threats it could pose, we have had to find a way to fund that. And a way to do it was overcharging on this stuff. Now, that's one way to look at it. Maybe it was just a money-making scheme on behalf of contractors and folks. And, you know, Jeremy, you're my mate, you make toilet seats, you know, I'm going to give you this contract and put a number on that, you know, that sheet of paper and invoice me. But that could make sense. I don't know, what's your take on that sort of thinking?
Yeah, that's a complex issue. I'm surprised he brought it up. It's like front loading, you know, criminality. You're like, hey, by the way, we might have done this and, you know, we should have some forgiveness. I don't think he's wholly wrong, but what he's talking about is the black budget. And early on in my days in investigating this UFO topic, like way before I ever said anything publicly, I actually went down to the Library of Congress and I calculated for a friend the American black budget for that year. It was really bizarre. Went to DC, went to the Library of Congress, went through the budget line items, and they literally said on the sheets of paper, like, black budget. Like, this is stuff that like Congress doesn't even know about. So we're talking about laundering money. I mean, that's what we're doing. We're talking about laundering taxpayer money to utilize it in different ways. Now, of course, there's an argument for that. Like, if we were in the Cold War and we were in a race for nuclear armament, I think Americans would be like, I get it. That was an expensive toilet seat, but really glad you did it because we were really under threat and people didn't really know how bad it was, right? So that would be the argument for okaying that black budget, right? But I brought that up with George a couple times, wanted to see his perspective. And he says, of course, there should be some reconciliation and there should be some, you know, basic forgiveness. He goes, but to what degree? Because George is old school. He's seen it happen. We watched as certain people have been threatened and penalized for even just speaking to us, right? Like threatening emails from high up all the way down, like don't talk to journalists, don't talk to these guys. So we've seen the reprisals that have been put on people. And George made a good point. He goes, yeah, that makes sense to a degree, but where do you draw the line? And he goes, what if somebody has killed somebody to hide this secret? We know for sure people have been killed to hide the nuclear secrets, and we just accept that. So I think, Andy, like it's in the realm of morality now, right? It comes down to how bad's the crime. You know, I can understand keeping certain funds secret so you can work on programs and keeping certain UAP programs secret because of the weaponization potential. But at some point, we're done with that. And we just need to say it like it is. Representative government represents us. It's now time to come clean on the UFO thing. And I think we're close to that, closer than we've ever been before, that we're fed up with it. And hopefully that has impact.
Josh says, a few years ago, both Jeremy and George hinted that there were at least four UFO programs. Can Jeremy elaborate on that any further?
I can't elaborate that any further. And I think that's kind of diminishing the truth, you know, just by focusing on that one statement. There are many UFO programs. I became aware of a certain number of them early on. But there are kind of factions of groups. Think about it this way. Like if you had a craft and in that craft was writing and was biologics and that kind of thing, then you would have whole teams of people. You would have linguistics people. You'd have just technology-based people, power and propulsion people, people that dealt with biology. You'd have anthropologists. So you could put all of that under one name. So definitely there's a pyramid here going on with UFO programs. For example, we also learned about Immaculate Constellation. We haven't had that conversation yet, but what was that program or what is that program now under a different name? You know, and that program was an acquisition program where you would take and siphon off data, visual data of our exploitation, other nations' exploitation of those technologies, as well as just what they call NHI technologies, demonstrating things like instantaneous motion, like videos of this. You would pull them off of servers and collate them into a study group. That would be a pretty big project, right? So with the UFO programs and why I brought that up, you know, years before is because I became aware of a certain number that were kind of housed other programs, but it's a pyramid. It's a trickle down. There are numerous UFO-related programs based upon what it is that we are analyzing, and you could come up with any arbitrary number, but there are some core programs for sure.
A personal highlight for me was when I spoke to George, I think back in December, I spoke to George about his new series, and I asked him a question about, we were talking about alien abductions, and I asked him, had he ever come across any research or programs where aspects of the government, the legacy programs, whatever they may be, had found a way to bring on abductions and trigger them themselves? And is that something you've come across or can talk on?
You know, I like to stay within what I know to be the case. I do believe that George has been exposed to significant amounts of information related to UFO programs that, as a journalist, not many people have been. And I think he is perfectly positioned to talk about that. All I can say is I've been exposed to some information, and it appears that there is something more to the abduction phenomenon than I first thought. I would study it. If I was the government, I would study the fuck out of that.
That was
it. I'm not in a position. So sorry. Let me.
No, no, it's okay.
I'm not in a position to offer more information on that I can stand behind. But like a lot of people, I might expect there to be more information on that.
That was a big topic of conversation again with John Blitch today around the abduction program. And he very much comes down on the reason for the secrecy isn't the lights in the sky, isn't the beings in the craft, because he's like, what good reason could you have for that? He believes it would have to be the abduction phenomenon, and that these craft and entities, some of them, can take you, your children, whoever they want, at will, do what they want and put them back. And whether there are agreements or not in place with said governments or factions, there's nothing they can do to protect you against that.
That would suck. You know, I have been exposed to some reporting on military observed, like implants and stuff like that, that have been studied. Now, my ability to put a value on that is not as good as maybe George Knapp or people that actually ran some of these programs that looked at this stuff. So I hope they talk for themselves. I wonder if people like Dr. Colm Kelleher would know more about that. Somebody you've had on the show before, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I am very careful about going into those realms because there seems like a fear aspect to it. Look, it would suck if the dirty, deep secret and the reason why a lot of these legacy program people, when I push all the way up to the edge and I say, what is so scary? What is so dangerous for us that you can't say anymore, that you just stop right there? And, you know, when they're like, you know, don't kick a sleeping dog or don't wake a sleeping dog, you know, it makes you feel like, so what is so dangerous? What is so scary? I would guess that the abduction phenomenon, if it is what it appears to us to be, that is a terrible, terrible, frightening thing for human beings to have to contend with, that there are abductions. And I would suppose there are abductions. I would suppose that does happen, because that has always followed the UFO topic. I mean, since the beginning of time of people reporting this, the abduction phenomenon goes way back. But again, it's so out there for me because I don't have tangible evidence or information I can convey. I can tell you, I've heard everything, man. I'll be honest with, you know, or I'll be transparent with that, which is that I've heard it all, man. Now, do I put stock into that? I just don't have enough information.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, it's so speculative, and I'm always fascinated to hear people's testimony, and it ranges from these wonderful, almost heavenly-like experiences to plumbing the depths of hell, what some people go through in these abductions. And I almost wonder, is there an element, again, just speculation, and I'll take your comment on it. Okay. If these beings are doing these abductions almost quietly, and not too, you know, too brashly, because there's a lack of knowledge or belief in NHI in general? And is there a danger that And I'm trying to, I suppose, think of the government's point of view here, or whoever runs these programs. Imagine it was the case that, well, if everyone finds out and the human population now know that NHI exists and we are here, then we don't have to hide anymore. And literally en masse, we will come and do this as we please. And we will pluck people out their beds or their jobs, their desks in the middle of the day because, you know. But while people don't know and while it's blissful ignorance, they go about it quietly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I wouldn't pre-warn or want people to be fully aware if I was a, you know, a species that was like bagging and tagging like antelope or something in a valley. I wouldn't go like whisper to the antelope and let them know everything that's going on. So I don't know. But what I think we should highlight is that as we learn more about the reality of UFOs, like the machines themselves, we'll start asking about operators or pilots of those machines. Then we'll start asking about agenda. Then we'll start asking about all the things in UFO lore that have collided with sightings. And one that is, we are incapable of getting around, if you listen to people, is the abduction phenomenon.
Something I've recently started thinking about, and I'll really have to try and, you know, qualify it and write it down because I'm not eloquent enough. I've said that before to kind of spitball these things. But is quantity of craft. And I don't mean, you know, Bob Lazar says we have recovered 9 in a hangar. I mean, how many of these active craft are there? Because if they can manipulate space, time, you know, whatever, travel at incredible speeds, you could essentially have a handful of craft operating at any one time in the globe, you know, in the single digits, but people think there's thousands. There could be thousands of sightings of the same 5 craft. So is it that we have loads of these things visiting, or actually it's quite a small number, but that's a very hard one to pin down?
It is. I would suggest that at any given time, we have enough activity going on consecutively. Like just the 2019 events that George and I talked about, you had 14 on radar at one time. There were a lot more. I don't think that it's a matter of very few craft. I think that there are a lot of craft a lot of the time. That's at least what the evidence shows me. I had a very dramatic friend back in the day before he died. His name was John Lear, the godfather of conspiracy, and, you know, kind of filmed with him for many years. And like, he had wild ideas. You know, I'm not sitting here saying what he told you was true, but some of what he discovered was true. He had this very dramatic thing he'd say to me, and he'd be like, "Jeremy, if you could see at any given time all the craft in our sky, the sky would be black." You know, his standpoint was we have so much happening all the time and that they can cloak and that we're not seeing them. My question to that is, look, it takes us like one tiny little satellite to map the entire surface of the moon in a week, right? That the number of craft and the varied looks of these craft that are reported, it just doesn't add up. There's something else going on to have these many shapes and this much activity. So I don't know what the purpose would be to having so many different craft when we can go map the moon with a single orbiter in a very short amount of time. So I don't know the answer to it. I would suspect, though, that there has been both an increase of frequency and there has been better imaging technology to pick these things up. Maybe it's been the case. There's always been so much craft and we're just seeing them more. But I think there's two things going on at one time. And why? I don't know. I don't know. Wish I did.
Before we talk about whistleblowers again, because a lot of the questions focused on that situation, you did mention the whole 2027 craft heading toward Earth thing. And you mentioned clips can be taken out of context. I got a lot of questions about that clip. A lot of them were, who's coming up with this? Is there a ship heading towards us, you know, etc.? Can you just clear up what it was you said, the context behind it, so people are clear?
Sure.
And we can kind of go from there.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to do so. But I'm not sure it will clean anything up because people seem to want to portray what I said in their own way. I think if you watch it, you'll understand. I was, again, saying the quiet part out loud. I don't need to tell you anything about those dates. They're everywhere. Every UFO person has gotten texts or they have heard it or they've been told it. And I shouldn't have to clean anything up. What I was saying is that I have heard that repeatedly over and over, that I have rooted it down to its origin. And I know that there is a document from the 70s that gave that idea to people, and that it was not enough information, that I thought that from what I looked at, what I was exposed to, that is something that people are portraying as, oh, something's coming. Now, look, I could be wrong, but in my show, and what a thing to be wrong about. Wow. But yeah. In my show, what I did was I said, hey, I am concerned about this. I am concerned you are all coming to me telling me you've been told about this, that this is something in the zeitgeist of the UFO public that I thought was very dangerous. I thought, you know, we've all heard about, what is it, Project Blue Beam and all that stuff about a fake alien invasion. And so it was so on the pulse of what I've heard in our popular understanding of the UFO thing, and it was increasing, getting louder. I was calling it out. And I was saying, I don't trust it. I think it's bullshit. And I just wanted to say that so that people could hear my perspective on it. But that very quickly got turned into me saying, we're going to have a fake craft coming and all this stuff. And that's not what I was saying. I was saying, beware of people telling you that. Beware of that general concept that I think it's bullshit and horseshit.
So do you think in general then, and thanks for clearing that up, that we're in a time with things being so full on, with so much information being thrown at us all constantly, we're going to get a lot of, is it disinformation? I think that's a lazy term sometimes, but we're going to get a lot of things thrown at us deliberately just to muddy the water.
100%. That's what I've, you know, kind of tried to raise the alarm about, is that as you get flooded, George says something like flooding the zone, like it's some term for football or something. I don't watch football, but flooding the zone. The idea that we're getting so much information bombarded that people are going to take advantage of that, and you're going to have a lot of kind of false prophets with this stuff, right? People that take credit for things that they didn't do, you know, as if they're influencing this. Look, the UFO thing, man, it brings in so many huge feelings about the nature of reality and about what's going on. I do believe that we need to be on guard for false and bad information coming forward. I certainly do. I get all the time seated with stuff that people want to just use my mouth for, you know, maybe to cut me down later and say he was wrong. You know, newsflash, I'm wrong all the time. Ask my wife, you know. But I do try to vet information, and specifically people, in an absolutely intense and dogged way before I bring him forward. So I do my best.
A good place to ask you then about Anna Polina Luna has just tweeted that she's got a big announcement coming next week.
Yeah.
Folks in the UFO community have latched onto this and went, it's UFO related, it's UAP related. Someone did ask her, and Jared Moskowitz replied saying, you're warmish. Mm-hmm. Now that to me doesn't reek of it's UFO UAP related, but that could be something along, and a good place to bring up that whole FBI working group situation getting outed and people being sacked. It could just be something around intelligence services. I'll stop waffling, but ask, have you heard much about this, and do you know if it is indeed UFO related?
Yeah, so I would what I'll say is that I can imagine that it's transparency related, but I don't know for sure. Of course, I've heard from people what they think's going on. People, you know, I decline to like just find out from her. I think that she should just speak for herself. So
yeah,
what is it? I'm sure, like, everybody can wait a week. Like, what is it? It's probably just, you know, about transparency. Great. It will apply to the UFO thing if it is. If there's some sort of executive order dealing with transparency with the intelligence agencies, that's a fucking win. So I'm assuming it's that. I don't directly know, and I don't feel like asking.
No, that's fine. And that's my kind of thoughts as well with it, that people have just looked at the statement and went, oh, it must be UFO related.
Oh,
and
I get it. Okay.
Yeah. And when there's a lot coming out.
Yeah. I think it will probably be transparency based. I'm not a fortune teller, though. Just wait and see. Yeah.
And people will soon enough. Perhaps after this goes out, perhaps before it, who knows? So on the whistleblower stuff then, this has been obviously the year of the whistleblower currently. It was almost the end of last year if you had got the chance to get that whistleblower sat down in Congress. But like you say, it maybe wasn't for that hearing anyway. Perhaps it was for a next hearing, depending on how things play out. So a lot of questions on whistleblowers. Casey asks, did Jeremy know about Jake Barber? And if so, why didn't you break his story first or mention a story previous to him coming out?
Yeah, I mean, so of course, I think in the small circles of journalism, I did hear about Jake Barber. I didn't, you know, he didn't come to me with the information. And it was also something that, as I kind of saw it percolating, I knew it was in good hands. You can't do every story. Like, I think that would be very weird. It takes a lot of, so I wasn't given the opportunity to jump into that story. I think there are other people better suited for that story. And also, a lot of people, maybe people don't understand this, a lot of people come to me and George, a lot of people. And oftentimes, George and I are unable to do sufficient amount of background on somebody to be able to stand behind them. So people that are public now absolutely came to me and George early on. We didn't have enough to say, we can get behind this. Like with David Grush, we could, absolutely. We had about a year and I mean, he came to my home. I talked to other people he worked with. We were able to vet that information to the point where I would sit behind him in Congress and you know, fight to get him to testify because I had sufficient time and experience to trust that information. So what I think the disconnect is people don't understand that a lot of the individuals that will come to us, we sometimes spend a year or so and then kind of hand off some of the information to other people. And other journalists do that with us too. You're better qualified to look into this. You have better sources. They're going to help you with that. And so I think that's kind of teamwork. That's like working together. Even if you're not like working together on a case. So the Jake Barber story and account and what he did, from what I hear, it's on solid ground, but it was never something that I was given the opportunity to really dive into and assess for myself. But now I'm assessing it. Now I get to see it like you guys and find out.
Yeah, it's not that you're all sat in a room yourself, George, Ross Coulthart, Michael Schellenberger, and whoever answers the phone first gets the story. That's just not how that's not how these things work, obviously.
And I think whistleblowers also, there are certain people you know you can trust to a degree, so you might reach out for advice, not to break your story. Like first thing I tell people is, okay, cool. If you're looking to be on TV in a movie or for me to break your story, then go somewhere else. Like I'd love to hear what you have to say. But that's not the starting point. The starting point is, who are you? What do you have to say? Why are you calling? And then if I can say, hey, you know, this journalist might be better positioned to unravel some of the stuff within your account, then absolutely, we'll pass it over to other people. Sometimes it just stops dead in the water because there's nothing anybody can ever do to verify their claims.
So on that, I'm sure you've seen the egg video from the Jake Barber segment, 12-second clip. What was your thoughts on that piece of footage?
Looks like an egg. my thought, I'm not a video analyst. I do know that crash retrievals are real. I do know that crash retrieval of unknown origin are real. I mean, I personally know that. Like I have enough evidence from my work. And that I do know that there is, or there are, multiple programs to retrieve what they believe are NHI, non-human intelligence made craft. So why wouldn't that be one? But that's as far as I got, right? I think what people need to now do is talk with the people that brought the story forward, talk with the people who directly brought the footage forward, and look for origin of that footage and try to understand it better. So yeah, I'm like you. Like I'm with you on it. I don't have any special knowledge on that. I just hope we get to the bottom of that.
You're assuming I don't have special knowledge on it. I don't.
I am. Maybe you do. Sorry. Turn the tables, Andy.
Yeah. What's transparency? Up? I don't. But is there an element of with this emerging narrative and all these different points of attack, whatever you want to call it, that people maybe have to reset expectations around what disclosure is and what it's going to look like. Because I think for a lot of people, there are elements to, for if we just take the Barber story in isolation, it's one thing to have this guy come forward, incredible background, as you would expect, you know, the CV's glittering, and he says, I was retrieving UFOs, essentially. You get a little bit of footage of something similar. We're not saying it was Jake who was part of that footage. It was a separate piece of footage. But then the story in the same breath evolves into psionics, overcome with emotions and like a feminine godlike energy. And it just, it turns, and a lot of folks can't get their heads around that yet. But do we maybe just have to take a step back? And do you feel you have to do that yourself, even with what you know, and go, maybe this is genuine? How do you work with that?
Yeah, I don't dismiss it outright. I don't go around and, you know, do how can you do a deep investigation on a part of that, right? Like that's up to the people telling you. I know that people have validated Jake Barber's background. I have no reason to doubt that he did crash retrievals. I think we should pay attention to what he has to say. And even if it's outside of our scope of comfort, I think we should pay attention to it. Doesn't mean you have to, you know, just accept it all. Like, you know, everything needs rigor. But I do think we need to adjust a little bit. If this UFO thing is that weird, if it just, to me, it's weird. If it is that weird, then we do need to recalibrate. I will tell you this, man, this is not a new concept. I know a lot of people want like disclosure right now, and I'm so allergic to that term because maybe it's just from being in this field for a while. I don't really know what that means. So like, what is disclosure? Is it just the government telling you UFOs are real? They've already done that. Like, where does that end? Like, is it the president coming out and showing you a spacecraft and putting it, what's the show me state, Missouri? Putting a UFO in Missouri, right, on display where everybody can take their flamethrowers and torches and, you know, hammers and try to dent this thing. Like, what is disclosure? I don't know what that is for each person. And I do know that even if you're just looking at something scientifically, just because something is weird doesn't mean you can dismiss it. You need to look at it. So, yeah, I think we all need to have an open mind, but not let our marbles fall out. Just because one thing is true doesn't make another thing true, and we need to look at it. I don't know if that's helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it is. And let's get to some other questions here. These kind of fall into the, I'm not sure what category to put them in. Okay. Metal Matt says, here's right out of left field. Has Jeremy ever seen a ghost, and what does he think of the Sasquatch phenomenon?
Oh, wow. No, I don't. I don't have a lot of knowledge on kind of that thing. Have I ever seen a ghost? That's wild. Not to my knowledge, no. So I've kind of been focused on UFOs. I mean, I find those other realms fascinating. Some people say they intertwine, you know? Mm. And if you look at things like Skinwalker Ranch and where there's actual, like, you know, scientists claiming to see things come out of portholes, like then that would be that crossover. I'm filled up just with UFOs, hardware, whistleblowers. I'm filled up already. I'm not dismissing it. I just haven't embraced it with my own studies.
Did you see Tom DeLonge's Monsters in California movie?
I did, but I got a bad recall for movies. I remember renting it.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
That covers a lot of phenomena all in one film. Even the Bigfoot in a cave comes out at one point.
Oh,
so,
really? Okay, I got to rewatch it. Yeah.
Yeah. Dub says, would Jeremy agree that UFO UAP commentators are all in different camps? They don't openly disrespect each other, but they have different agendas, different ideas on disclosure. I'm with Jeremy and George on this topic.
Yeah. Are people in different camps? Like, no. We're all working towards the same goal. I think there is, in journalism, the old school mentality is there is competition for sure. You know, everybody wants to kind of, you know, see how much they can push the boundaries of getting scoops and that kind of thing. man, I broke enough stories in my life, and I know George Knapp has for sure. At this point for me, it's about working together. That doesn't mean you got to go on every news show and be like, that other journalist is amazing. Oh, wow. Like, you know, that's not really your job. Like, your job is just to try to uncover this and bring stuff forward and report the news as you know it. So I want to back up from that question and say, I think there's a misunderstanding. I hope there is. I don't think these are separate camps. I think we're all fighting towards a similar goal. Now, of course, some people are more sensitive than others, you know, when it comes to how they're trying to do this. I've had to drop that sensitivity to a high degree, because anytime you're reporting on this, you're going to have slings and arrows coming at you. And I think that's a mistake too, is to feel good by what other people think about you, just as you'd feel bad about the way other people think about you and your reporting. You just got to do what you think is right. We're not in separate camps. That's an illusion. We're all together, whether or not people hug it out or not.
Yeah, I've always said that with the podcast stuff. Anytime listeners come in, and if you get a guest on first after a big story, or, you know, let's just say Lou Elizondo's book comes out, whether you are the first or 50th interview doesn't really matter, because if you're the 50th, you've got 49 other interviews to dig into, get a goldmine of information and follow up on. But you know what? If you're the first, yep, you're the first person to ask the initial questions. The snow is white, there's no footprints, but you can make the most of no matter where you are in these. And I've never felt that either, that there has to be competition. You should just make yourself as kind of good as you can.
Yeah, I do think there's value in sometimes reminding people of the history of interviews. So I do think when you do something and you've worked harder and you get somebody there first, I think it's important to remind people, because then they can see that originating information and then how it evolves or devolves. So there is importance in acknowledging the first time that somebody speaks out and what they say, and watching how that evolves or devolves based on that. But yeah, man, I love the way you're thinking, because when you do your show, you do have the depth of information. If you're getting somebody after they've done a bunch of interviews, I think that's a really smart way to look at it.
Yeah, not that, you know, if someone wants to come on here instead of Joe Rogan first, I wouldn't accept that. That's absolutely fine. But I imagine they're going on 2 million downloads an episode, Joe Rogan first, you know.
Right, but that it's totally different. Like, Joe doesn't necessarily have somebody who's speaking out first on his show, right? Like, he'll wait to see what evolves so that you can have a conversation that is really well-rounded. And I think that's really smart. So,
yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Jamie asks, has Jeremy tried remote viewing, CE5 or guided meditation? And if so, what's he found the most effective?
Yeah, so I'm not the best candidate for being somebody you should look to for that information, because I'm just like not maybe psychically connected to those types of things. I don't know. But I've documented other people doing it for a long time. I actually never put out that footage, but one of my first films that I put together, I haven't put it out because it's still evolving. It was called Looking Up, and it was about this group of people who were friends of mine that were laughing at me because I told them, hey, I'm following this guy. And every time he doesn't have a house or whatever, right? But he would look into the sky and tell me something's coming. And then sure enough, I'm filming and something appears. And I thought it was really weird. So I was trying to document that. I was telling some of my friends about it. They were just laughing at me. I'm like, look, man, I'm following the evidence where it's going. Here's a guy saying he can do it. Here's the thing in the sky. And I'd show him the footage. Again, it's never like a craft, like the most beautiful thing. So I was very skeptical. What was this guy seeing? But I thought that was a story too. But that was back in like 2011. So I kind of followed that along the way. And sure enough, some of my friends who were laughing at it had these really profound experiences. And to this day, they will tell you there is something to this. And it has been very impressive to them. And I have witnessed some of that. There may very well be a very strong connection between human consciousness and what we perceive as UFOs. I am not an authority on it. I'm not even good at it. But there are other people who I think would be better suited to tell you what to do. But from my experience, it was just like asking to see something and being calm. And some of some of these individuals have documented some pretty wild things in the sky after that.
Cool. Last couple of questions, and then I can let you go, Jeremy. Someone's literally called themselves Purple Burglar, knowing full well Scottish people can't say that. So, Purple Burglar, what an arsehole, says... The first question is, do you know what those drones over the US actually were?
I do not. What I do know is that you're being lied to straight up from the White House, because, and let me qualify that. A lot of people who were participating in the defense of critical infrastructure, I won't call them sources, I'll call them contacts, right? They're not giving me anything. We're breaking it down for me. There were these communications between the FAA and these defense locations. The FAA had no idea. The FAA had no idea where these were coming from, to the point where they put up restricted flying zones because they did not authorize these flights. So I know you're being lied to by the White House, or somebody gave them bad information and they're repeating it. That's possible too. Don't know. But there were events surrounding these critical infrastructure sites that dealt with absolutely bizarre shaped UAP coming up out of the water on camera, documented on FLIR, and hovering over these bases. You can take that to the bank. And those were not craft like you know them. So I don't know exactly what was going on over the New Jersey skies. And I know for a fact it wasn't just New Jersey skies, and that this is something that's been going on for a long time, and that it is important for us to find out more. But I don't know ground truth on that. I just know you're being lied to.
What stood out to me was it ran over two administrations. So people kicked off at Biden for not coming out and doing anything. People are now disappointed Trump has come out with the whitewashing of it. And that just says to me that there is something else, someone else in the background making these calls, making these decisions, giving this information to say, here's what it is. And let's be fair, if they go to Trump and say, this is what it was, what does he do with that? He can't say, well, no, it isn't. So he's going to have to run with that. And his advisors will have to run with that, won't he?
Yeah. I mean, I guess he could dig in more and say, wait a second, that makes zero sense. So I'm not just going to repeat that or have my aide repeat that. I'm going to dig in. You'd hope that's what's happened. I mean, especially because certain presidents have come forward and said they've been lied to about the UFO phenomenon. You would hope that. We didn't see that. But maybe that story isn't over yet, though. I don't know. I would hope they would dig in, because it's absolutely nonsensical and bullshit.
And a second question from that listener. I'm not saying the name again. At what point would we need to be at for you to consider dropping hard disclosure? And I think you'll know what they're getting at there. Basically, everything you know. Complete stagnation from the government. World War III. What would it be?
Right. So it's making an assumption, right? That question is making an assumption that I have somehow with George obtained anything that would cause that reaction, right? To be, that's hard disclosure, case closed. That's just not true. It's not true. I'm still vetting information. If you watched the show that I put out, I sit on a lot of information, but not idly, because I have found over time some of it that has come our way that we've been exposed to was incorrect information. Some of it was fabricated. Some of it was good, but it also puts individuals who have informed us in awkward positions that are not worth, you know, breaching that trust. Sometimes people just show us, tell us, supply us information with the express understanding this is for our knowledge and to help us move forward and ask better questions.
Sure.
So I don't think I'm in the position that people think I'm in, that if I dropped everything I have, that it would really do what they're thinking or allegedly have, right? What I've been exposed to or have access to. If I was able to somehow magically put all of that out all at once, would it really be a benefit to this conversation, or would it be a distraction? I hope that by the time George and I ever put anything out, that we have done our due diligence to the point where we are 100% rock solid. And we've tried every time to do that, you know, hit or miss, that's our attempt moving forward. Will you see more from us in our reporting? I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. But people also have to understand there are traps that are set for journalists these days. And, you know, you could have really good information, but the intent of getting that to you is so that you can be controlled or stopped later. That's just true. That's a briar patch.
One of the big ones for me on that sort of question, and I know it's common for people to ask that or want to know what big journalists, big UFO journalists know, was when Ross Coulthart mentioned about, you know, a UFO so big they built a building over it. And he said, it doesn't matter if I give you the location, because one, it's a working building and people go there for employment, etc. But let's say a journalist like yourself did come out and say, I know where a UFO is, literally a building's built over it. If we all went there, what are you going to do? It's not as if it's literally a box over a craft. It's likely underground and has multiple layers over the top of it. It could be a factory building, you know, Teslas, or, you know, you're a Tesla fan, you know, you've got the Cybertruck. It could be a factory like that, but none of the folks there even know what's underneath. So you don't know. You can't just go digging. And I think people have this idea that there are journalists, or even would it matter if Lou Elizondo spilled everything he knew on the news tonight live? Would that cause disclosure? Probably not still.
No. It's a great example. You know, that's a great example. When you've worked in this field long enough and you have spoken directly, and you probably know this from your work, Andy, like you talk directly with people, even off record, you hear all of these things. You hear them for years. You start to shape your understanding, right, based on the reliability of the sources. But what is that going to do? I think he's right. I think Ross is right in saying that. Like, what is that going to do? Is that going to help anybody? Maybe if you give that information to groups like Arrow, if they were working in good faith, that would have been a good thing. I know for sure they're aware of that location. Like, I know who they talked with. I know that they would have been told that information. I can go find out if they were told that information. So that would be a beneficial use if we're all trying to uncover this, is putting that in through proper realms, telling everybody on planet Earth where one of these alleged craft are that's so big you can't even get to it. I agree. I don't think that's going to do anything except cause chaos. But that's not up to me. You know, if I was reporting on that, then it would be up to me. But I'm not reporting on that.
Yeah. I learned early on that even when someone does tell you something off record, like you say, you don't know if it's true, if it's second, third, fourth hand information, and you can only end up looking silly. So, yeah.
Well, not even looking silly, like you could go on a wrong track for a long amount of time. So yep. Anytime somebody's told me these prophetic UFO things, I'm like, cool, where'd you see that? Where'd you hear that? I dug in. And there just wasn't meat on the bone in the way people were portraying it. So I'm like, well, let's back up a second here. So yeah, everybody's got to do that on their own.
And the final question from Caden, I think, is a nice one to end on. He says, Jeremy, things seem to have gotten very serious and complicated with the way the UFO conversation is advancing with Congress and our officials. It seems like certain individuals are setting themselves up to benefit all while further concealing the truth. With all of this shady behavior and obfuscation, what is it that keeps you going, and what do you still find most rewarding about your job?
Well, that's a very cool question. I do agree that there's a lot of positioning. You know, my joke is all the king's horses, all the king's men are shaping the UAP narrative again. And I do see that. I have to report that to you. I do see that. Is it a big problem? I don't know. But what motivates me is the same thing, I think, that has always motivated me about this. I find this topic fascinating. Whatever the core truth is, even if it's small, even if it's easily explained with very basic building blocks, the idea of what UFOs represent to human beings, it inspires me. I love working with George on these cases. I love talking to whistleblowers who have something to tell to me, even if I can't report on it. I love obtaining and sometimes being able to release some of the information that comes my way, which is a very small percentage. I think it's like the hunt, man. It's the hunt. I'm hungry for ground truth on the UFO thing. And even after all this time, you know, I don't have the answers, but I got better questions. And I think with better questions, were more dangerous, you know, to the truth, to the status quo. So that is what motivates me to this day, is that I have fun doing this, and I like learning, and I like coming to better questions. That is the truth. That is why I love this.
Awesome. And I think that comes across in your relationship with George as well. When you do weaponize, I know you don't always get together on a regular basis because you're both taken away and then converge again, but I've enjoyed that show. It helps a lot and puts things in context and provides a lot of extra information. So I appreciate that. And I know a lot of listeners out there do as well. And I just want to ask Jeremy to finish off, what are you working on at the moment? And when will we maybe next see the kind of fruits of your labor, shall we say?
Yeah, I think George and I are dedicated to doing the best episodes of Weaponized we can to break whatever news that we have. I think you'll see, hopefully, you'll be seeing people coming forward to speak for themselves, bringing clarity to some of what you saw in 2024, hopefully with Immaculate Constellation. I think that is an important story for the UFO world to really grasp the contents of that information. But again, people need to speak for themselves. I do hope that we'll get to the point in our vetting process that more footage can come forward publicly that we deem important, that we feel is important. So that's a process, a legal process as well. Like, I need to legally check everything as I go. Yeah, man, just fighting, more of the same, just fighting.
Before the summer?
I'm never going to make a prediction, dude. Okay. Just never going to do it. Life is so complicated, so messy. We're so messy, you know?
But we do know it will be high noon. So we'll leave it there, Jeremy.
Oh, high noon? Always.
Yeah, yeah. Always high noon. Always high noon. Yeah, yeah.
It's just a great time.
Hi, everyone. If you listen to the podcast on an Apple device, you can support directly by going on to Apple Podcasts and clicking the subscribe button. And for less than the price of a coffee per month, you can get early access to episodes in full, and no adverts or sponsorships like this one you're hearing now. It also supports directly to me at the podcast, so thank you very much. Also, don't forget to go and leave the podcast on Apple a 5-star review, and make sure you click the follow button too. Thanks.